Now, I have a running order here. It says podcast, 17th of December, 2010. Item 1, Sawtell.
There's nothing else on that sheet of paper. That's
no.
It. So I'm empty.
Two dirty men are inside your machine. We have a third, Paul Templeton. He's a counselor and he's filthy. Listen to us speak.
Protein Man. It's called the Protein Man. You heard of the Protein Man?
Unless that's that Atkins diet guy.
No. Well, actually he is. But he was before the Atkins guy.
Okay.
Stanley Green. There you go. Less lust, buy less protein. Meat, fish, bird, egg, cheese, peas, beans, nuts, and sitting. Protein wisdom. 7 pence a booklet.
Yeah, there was a guy who went around Sydney in the 80s graffitiing telegraph poles, public lavatories, with things saying, please eat the same 5 to 10 foods. And I don't know what that was about, but, you know, he got some delusion into his head that if you eat the same raw ingredients.
Sounds like a similar idea.
That would do something.
Something about these food fads. You know, there was a. I've known lots of people who've, you know, been into just raw foods or just you know, you got the macrobiotics. They're slightly crazy, aren't they? I mean, this guy, he had a thing about protein. He thought that people who ate too much protein, the protein would give you sexual desires.
Oh, you don't want
And you don't want that. No, it's disgusting. So he was saying that they should. The whole booklet's all about, you know, controlling your desires. There's a real undercurrent of sexual tension throughout the entire 12 pages. And he keeps using capital letters just randomly sprinkled. You know how those old texts from the end, like if you look at an encyclopedia from the 18th century, every time they mention God or the Holy Land, it's all in capital letters.
Yep.
Well, he's the same thing, but like he's discreet in capital letters. Discreet behaviour is an important part of respectability and has assisted men and women to be virgins for their weddings. And yet some have been to, capital letters, university and other places of advanced learning and had sexual friends at that time and were very passionate too. Being discreet helps to keep people faithful in marriage as well. See page 4, line 21. And then in large red capitals, this is the cover of the book. It says, 8 passion proteins with care. This booklet would benefit more if it were read occasionally, and it deserves to be read at all times of life, marriage, expectancy, menopause, retirement, old age, and new situations, etc. Now, I've had this book since 1991, and I just pulled that today. I was having a read of it. It was very entertaining.
So do you feel that your carnal passions have been diminished?
I refuse to answer that question on the basis that Alison's looking at me funny. It is a long time ago when my mum and dad, they told me that I had to be a good boy. I had to mind all the traditions. And it's not on the internet. Although I might fix that. I think
you have a public duty.
Well, exactly.
In order to keep order and discretion.
London Museum has 32 of the 48 versions of the book. And I think I've probably got one of them which they haven't got. So I might add to the world's knowledge by scanning in my 14 page book.
So he did keep revising it as new evidence came to hand.
Oh yeah, and he had his very own printing press that he made himself.
Wow.
With crazy typography. He used to put in, like, he'd set up, that's why there's all these capital letters everywhere randomly, and he uses different typefaces. I think he must have scabbed typefaces of old printing presses or something, because he seems to have all these crazy typefaces. And you think, you know, why is he, is, you know, I come from the internet era, where, or magazines, where when it's in a different typeface, it's normally a quotation, or it's a you know, another part of the text.
It has some significance.
But he would just randomly change it. You know, there'd be a section in one particular type and another section in another type.
And it just meant he ran out of letters.
I think so, yeah, yeah. It's, yeah, and he used to cycle into the middle of the town every day after a bowl of porridge with very low protein, obviously, and then stand in outside a sort of round marble arch end of Oxford Street with his placard saying that protein thing I just read up to earlier, with his booklets. And I met him, I'd seen him around. He always scared me a bit because he'd shout out at people and say, "Oh, I can see it, tell you're not a virgin, I can smell it on you," things like that. So I was always a bit nervous of approaching him, but yet at the same time I knew that he was a character that I had to make friends with, at least.
Why were you nervous? Because he would say, "Ah, finally, a virgin, come here.
Yes, join, come into the fold." Yeah, well, I wasn't worried about that. But I think I got him very near, I think he died in the early 90s. Because after I had bought the little booklet off him, I very rarely saw him in town. But I had seen him heaps before that, and then he stopped hanging around so much. I think maybe, you know, I might have affected that, I don't know. But poor old Stanley Green. God bless him. Alright, where's that wine? Time for a segue. Some strange old man on your front deck there. Tramp or something? Hello?
I don't know. He looks a bit suspect, but he's brought his own bag from the bottle shop.
He's got two brown paper bags with bottle shapes inside, so I think he can come in.
Yeah.
Come in. Welcome to the podcast.
This is it. The table.
There's a bottle of wine next to a microphone. Don't confuse the two.
Right.
Don't drink from the microphone and talk into the bottle of wine. That's the point at which we have to stop.
It looks very ominous.
It's like a test.
What, the wine or the microphone?
The two next to each other. It's a test. Once you start picking up the microphone and trying to chunder it into your glass, then it's all over.
Right, all over.
I was going to bring my homebrew too. That would have been getting pretty rough by then if we were drinking the homebrew.
No, I liked your last drop.
Yeah.
Yeah, I tried to describe it to my wife, but she failed.
She rolled her eyes and said, "This is the same man who was thrashing around in your yard covered in mud a few weeks ago."
Oh, we must talk about the Womble.
The Womble with no photographs.
Yeah, well, I will get photographs.
Oh, yes. Checks in the post, yeah.
Today, it had a proper firing.
Oh, did it?
Yes. Okay. And,
it hasn't cracked yet?
It hasn't cracked. It's still soft inside.
So you've taken the sand out?
Taken all the sand out.
So for the benefit of the listeners,
well, first of all,
who aren't already sitting around this table.
Who am I?
Who are you? Well, are you some bloke on the ground? We thought you were a tramp.
We can put that in post, but we do need to explain what the Womble is.
The Womble. Well, I can't remember exactly who christened the Womble, but a mud pizza oven, which was Googled a few minutes before we actually constructed it, and in the end we used lots of concrete.
That's not what your wife Verity didn't tell me. That this is a different story. She said that you spent 2 years googling how to build a Womble.
A pizza oven, yes.
Pizza oven, sorry.
Yes.
Pizza oven.
And this is only the temporary.
Not the sarcophagus of a giant Womble.
No, it looks like a Womble, I must admit. It performs like a Womble. It takes a long time to get going. But, yes. And so
you've scooped the insides out.
We should tell everybody how we built it. It's a slab of bricks with a pile of wet sand to make the inside shape.
We stuffed that into the carcass of a dead Womble. Burnt the fur off it.
I think people get the idea of the shape. It's not like a turkey. It's a Womble, a stuffed Womble. Yep. And then coated in copious amounts of what is it? Clay, sand, lucent.
It smelled like cat poo, actually.
And concrete, yes, or cat wee.
Possibly, it's debatable.
Yes.
bit of both, I thought.
It tasted like cat poop.
Yes, well, you know, the formula does talk about poo, but we negated that one.
Using cement.
Cement instead. So it's bound very, very well.
I find that interesting that you can exchange poo and cement on equal terms.
Well, I don't know if you can. I think we just did.
Moving right along.
Well, I was going to say, we tested today. We got some puff pastry and we threw a pan in there and we, it worked. It puffed up. It did what it should do. So.
Oh, okay. And so now you've had a fire inside. Has it dried out inside?
No, it's still soft.
How big was the fire?
It was big.
Wow.
Yeah, I had it going now. It was 4 hours, 5 hours. So, well, I only built it a weekend ago.
Mm.
It's meant to take 4 weeks to dry out.
Christmas is coming.
Christmas is coming. For the benefits of the listeners, it had to be ready by Christmas Eve.
And he had 2 years to prepare.
Well, it's done now. thanks to my cohorts.
Yes, well, and this is the payment. We drag you in for a podcast and you have no choice. We rolled around in mud in the pissing rain. Sorry, you have to bleep out my atrocious drunken swearing.
Can I say, of all the podcasts so far, nothing's been bleeped.
Hasn't it? Well, you know, you always trust Matthew to edit out any embarrassing faux pas on my...
Unless they're funny.
They're never funny, Matthew.
Unless I think they're funny. The embarrassing faux pas I think are funny stay in.
The audience of this podcast is Matthew, doing this all completely for his own amusement. You realise that, don't you?
As my mother used to say, when life gives you lemons, you should learn to like lemons. Else ignore them. Whatever you do, just don't make a fuss.
I was talking to Paul the other day about cat psychology, as you do.
As you do, yeah.
And,
as you do.
Yeah, because it's fascinating. I mean, this is why I should not be the father of a human child, because I would just be running experiments on them the whole time.
And what do you think I'm doing with my kids?
So I was saying to Paul the other night that the thing about Jackie, who was raised in a two-bedroom flat, is that his world is much more attuned to human behaviour than a wild cat's world would be. So he has what they call in developmental psychology the theory of mind, or a theory of mind, I don't know which. So he not only is aware of his surroundings, but he's also aware that what's going on in my head is somewhat similar to what's going on in his head. So he has some sort of ability to do second order reasoning about what he thinks I think. So most days I get up before Alison, so I feed them breakfast. but one day a week Alison goes to her breakfast rotary meeting, so she gets up before me. And when I get up, I know that Alison's fed them, but Jackie thinks I don't know. So he comes up saying, "Hello, it's breakfast time." But he doesn't, you know, he doesn't do that at any other time. It's not like he expects me to feed him whenever he charges up saying, "Hello, it's breakfast time."
Yes, it's
so he thinks he knows what I think, which is a remarkable thing for an animal with a brain which is presumably about the size of an apricot.
See, this goes into the thing I was discussing last podcast about the external mind. You see, I don't think the size of the brain has any relationship. I mean, maybe your cat can use Wikipedia. You don't know when you're out.
No, I don't. Well, he's not. He's not making blog posts on my behalf, saying, "Please, Ruben, can you drop off some cat food?"
I thought that was you who said that.
It's been all go this afternoon in Sawtell. Out the front of Castle Atkinson.
Yep, with the new gleaming white castle of Atkinson.
Yep, the street corner exploded. And there, really? there was a plume of muddy water.
I did see a very large big digger out the front just now when I drove past with lights.
That will explain that. There was a plume of muddy water about 4 or 5 metres high.
Excellent, really?
Yeah.
Is it still white?
Sorry?
Is the Castle Atkinson still gleaming white, or is it gleaming white with a touch of brown?
It shot off at an angle and kind of headed in the direction of the pub, unfortunately. So I think some of the people in the bistro had their meals interrupted rather unpleasantly.
Would you like a little sauce on your meal, sir?
Especially given that they just fertilised the ground with dynamic lifter
yesterday. I've been smelling it all day. Yeah. Yes, it's delightful shit smell.
Yeah. So that went streaming off in the direction of the hotel bistro.
So Castle Atkinson's has been suffering from a bout of diarrhoea.
Essentially, yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Well, that's a question. Was it actual water or was it sewage?
It was water. Oh, it was coming out at a good old pressure. And I walked past a while after they'd turned the water off and managed to pump out what was filling the crater. And it's actually sort of eroded away a fair amount underneath the actual road surface as well. So
it was the mains?
Must have been.
Beautiful. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, this is the scheduled maintenance program.
Yes.
When you can't afford to maintain pipes, well, you let them go until they go.
Yeah.
it's more cost effective that way.
I remember coming across a burst water main on King's Cross Road in London once when I was a motorbike courier. And when you say it was bursting what, 4 or 5 metres into the sky, This one wasn't doing that at all. It was actually so extensively burst that it wasn't so much bursting to the sky as turning the road into a river.
Yeah. Well,
they had a pipe as big as your house, which had just ruptured, and the whole thing just welled out. And I was, up to my axles on my motorbike in filthy London drinking water, which is, urine recycled 7 times.
So they say.
Yeah, it tastes all right.
bit of added flavour.
Yeah, it's alright. Chew on. So it's like a burst water main to entertain a
it is holiday season, you've got to have entertainment.
Yeah.
It is summer, entertainment, holidays. I think it probably went down very well. All you needed was kids, cozzies.
I think it's a good case for the council to build a small plastic explosive charges into the water mains randomly around tourist towns to entertain tourists, and they could just blow up the water mains.
Just put it down the pipe and let it go, and wherever it may blow.
Yeah, and all the councillors' kids and the people in the know, people who work for the council who knew it was about to happen, they'd all be down there waiting with their boogie boards in the middle of the high street. Boom! And off they go. Fantastic.
How did Sawtelle get a chili festival? Now, Coffs Harbour or even Sawtelle is not renowned for chilies. If you know,
well, actually, you're mistaken there. Sawtelle is actually a ship was wrecked off the coast of Sawtelle in 1816 from South America, and it was actually loaded with a shipment of chilies for the South American miners in Queensland. It's a little known fact.
It's true.
It's recorded in the annals.
Well, it's recorded here now too,
and it'll be on Wikipedia tomorrow night
for about 2.5 minutes.
No, there was a woman from Brazil, and she waded ashore with a small wooden casket containing a batch of chilies, which she distributed. Well, she didn't distribute. She gave to the Sawtelles who had settled there, and they planted a small batch of these chilies, which spread, and that's actually where chilies first came into Australia.
I swear on my
mother's socks.
I'll wait until I see it on Wikipedia, and then I'll believe it.
It's just the kind of thing I'd expect from a completely, you know, gullible person who might get sucked into.
There's an ounce of
any,
truth.
Any wiki leaks or any of those
crazy
things.
There's an ounce of truth
things.
In everything, you know.
So tell us about the ounce of truth that was WikiLeaks, and you know.
I stood.
What's the story there?
I'm just waiting for the fallout the dust to settle from the fallout. You know, it's one of these things that I don't think anybody will ever understand.
A bit like Matthew's cats.
Yes, they exist,
but no one will ever understand them.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. No. So I'm assuming you're referring to the internet wars, as they've labelled it.
Well, I mean, there's two sides to this story. That there's the one thing which is WikiLeaks itself, the main story, and I think this is absolutely fascinating because it's basically revealing everything that anybody with an ounce of sense already knew, but it's unusual that you would have.
It's confirmation.
That you would have a realistic picture of the world come out of a government agency.
And
that's the thing that's fascinating, because these are all US diplomatic cables, and the US government has been, you know, for, well, not just the last 10 years, but for God knows how long, living in kind of a fantasy world and making public pronouncements of, you know, so detached from reality that it's just bizarre. And all the time, they're getting reports back from their diplomats that are actually grounded in reality, and so that sort of veil of plausible deniability is completely gone from American foreign policy. They can no longer, you know, say ridiculous things.
There was no weapons of mass destruction there.
Or we're winning the war in Afghanistan.
Yeah. Or the war in Afghanistan is winnable. Or even by any sort of rational sense of the term, a war. It's just, you know, pounding a defenceless civilian population and
that sort of stuff. Who doesn't really want you there in the first place.
Yeah. So all of this is utterly fascinating. Apart from the salacious trivia and things like that, but as the editor of the Guardian said, there's 250,000 cables that WikiLeaks have, of which something like 0.5% have so far been released. So unless they've been releasing the absolute juiciest stuff,
if I had the information, I would start off with a couple of tidbits, but just basically benign stuff, and that's what a lot of it is.
And work your way up.
That's right. Get the profile. Once you get the audience listening, then you actually dump the juicy.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, is why a lot of the Western governments are now trying to stifle, take down, I don't know what you would call it, because I think they've now figured out exactly what has gone missing. And now they've started with their campaigns of...
They must have known that already. I mean, they've had the guy who leaked it. He's been in the brig for months now.
Yeah, but at the same time, if you got the information so easy, you may have just, you know, dragged and dropped. You may not have known what was in the folders.
No.
Which folders did you have? I don't know, just that one and that one.
That's what they'd need to know.
I'm zoning out this early in.
Well, you can always have a break and, you know, put your feet up in 5 minutes.
We can edit it out. We'll just put some intellectual words in here.
Yeah.
I was in a meeting the other day, and a thought occurred to me. That William Shakespeare, what an extraordinary content provider he was.
There you go.
Well, that was fantastic.
I feel much more I feel enlightened now, but a bit of poetry from Baudelaire would be good at this point.
Whatever anybody says to me, right, you can't find happiness in the bottom of a bottle. I always say to them, well, that's because you're not really trying, are you? You know what I mean? Yeah.
That's beautiful, isn't it?
I just find it amazing how you can put so much in such a short period of time.
It's incredible.
To me, it was like a second.
Yeah, I know. It's almost like Doctor Who's TARDIS or something, isn't it? We inhabit this small world, but in the cracks between our words, there can be these most incredible,
prolific
things.
Which I suppose we're trying to get back to the WikiLeaks thing. I know where this conversation is going to go.
Nowhere at all. So let's go back to WikiLeaks. OpenLeaks is an interesting one because that's a bunch of guys who had a falling out with the WikiLeaks mob.
Yes, because they wanted more of a faceless organisation that actually
just leaked
the information
like
and leaked the
constant
others.
Cat.
Which you know, in some ways, I understand what they're saying.
Yeah, well, it seems like they're just planning to operate as essentially an anonymising layer between the leaker and the media.
Yeah.
But you imagine the danger there will be, what's to stop me going in there and having a whinge and bitch about anything I feel like leaking?
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, WikiLeaks is, as their defenders have said, recently, it is much more like a traditional media player in that it does work to verify the authenticity of the material that they're releasing and all that sort of thing. So unlike somebody who would just sort of set up
and a Dropbox.
A Dropbox, basically.
See, of course, yeah, go on.
I'm doing this all the time lately. Delicious was... There was a leak, not a WikiLeak, but just a leak that Delicious was shutting down today, which would, you know, might be disproved tomorrow. I don't know, but it served as impetus to me to go, well, I've been meaning to move my bookmarks to a open source solution, so I shifted them to I've remembered the name of it, Scuttle, to a bunch of scripts on SourceForge called Scuttle, which I just installed on my server and just download the XML file from Delicious and import it into Scuttle, and my bookmarks are now external. And don't worry, I'm coming back to WikiLeaks here. The point is that I'm wanting to put all my stuff into an open source server, you know, my bookmarks, my email, my, I don't know, proxy, my Facebook, you know, I don't want to use Facebook. I've closed my Facebook account down.
Waiting for Daisy Chain?
I don't want to wait for things anymore. I don't want to wait for things. I mean...
You're going to make yourself.
Just install the Konica, you know, Identica, you know, stick that on there. You can do it all, yeah, in Drupal. and why not have a peer-to-peer leaking mechanism? You know, I can you can have a whinge about things and just put it onto a leak thing, and it just goes out from your own local box. It's anonymized and is put out there on the network, and you can maybe make it into a location and say, look, I'm just having a bit of a whinge about, you know, my
council
councillor Paul Templeton. He's a right pain in the butt. He's got a giant womble in his backyard and he hasn't got planning permission. You know, I could leak about that, and
somehow I think you've just done that.
Oh shit. Oh, but I wasn't anonymous, you see, and that's what I think. I guess I'm tying in WikiLeaks with an open box.
Yeah, but the thing is, this is the waiting for the fallout of the events of the last couple of weeks, is I think it would be a wake-up call to people developing technology and looking at decentralized solutions and peer-to-peer networking.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've seen the flaws with WikiLeaks to start with. The fact that it was fairly easy to...
They're talking about doing peer-to-peer DNS on the open box at the moment. I got an email just this evening about that.
That'd be horrible. Can you imagine trying to do DOS attacks on that?
You wouldn't be able to do it.
No, it would just be moving around.
You might shut down one of the buggers, but there'll be 500 other ones.
That's what I mean.
Around the corner.
It'd be boring.
Yeah, well, it's all fine when you're using it, but when you know, Visa or MasterCard start using it, you'll never shut them down.
Well, no. MasterCard was successfully done because...
Not if they're using peer-to-peer DNS.
Not if they're peer-to-peer, but in the past weeks, because they had one IP address. But the thing is, with all those DOS attacks, it didn't really... It was a protest. It wasn't your typical, hidden attack. It was people getting upset with the world events and... having a go to organisations which basically walked away from an organisation without any valid warrant there was no legal process that indicated that there had been corruption or a breach of any law.
How can the people who were attacking Visa and MasterCard and so forth, how can they claim that they are protesters when they're anonymous?
Well, the thing is, anonymous
as opposed to being just plain old hackers, you know, or crackers.
I think there's a very good article on Slate Magazine which I'll link to in the show notes. It is genuinely a thoughtful and nuanced article. Normally, when you see things referred to as a thoughtful and nuanced article, there's just some pundit sitting on a fence, not declaring their preference for one side of an argument or another. But as I was saying to Paul the other night, I think that the difference between the anonymous attacks on MasterCard, PayPal, etc., and your ordinary denial of service attack is that your ordinary denial of service attack is organised by a script kiddie wanting to cause mayhem, or more often these days, somebody involved in some sort of criminal activity.
Yeah.
Whereas this was a matter of, you know, I'm going to use my bandwidth to get in the way of your bandwidth because I think that you've behaved wrongly and you therefore deserve some kind of interference in your day-to-day activities because you're not conducting your day-to-day activities in the way that you should.
It's bad citizenship, basically.
Yeah, and that I have no moral problem with that sort of action, which is essentially civil disobedience. But I think the problem is that it was launched by this anonymous group,
which
makes it a bit questionable. Mm. If it was a matter of you sign up to this and you genuinely sign up to it, I mean, and say, look, my name is Matthew Davidson or Paul Templeton or whoever, and I am involved in this denial of service attack on these people because I am a citizen and
I'm protesting
whatever,
because
and it becomes essentially a digital picket line, where you are physically standing in the way of these people doing their business, because
I can see that this could even be the very beginning, you know, where how did picket lines and strikes, where do they start? Were people out there waving around saying, you know, I'm Matthew Davidson or Ruben Hillier and I'm blocking this mine. I don't think they did. I think they were really shit scared, you know, because they were going to get, you know, blacklisted and never get a job again. I'm transferring all this to real life as opposed to the cyber world, because I think they're both real life.
Or just get shot, as happened quite a lot in the US in the early part of last century.
Yeah. Or in the north of England, you know, people were not shot dead, but they were beaten to death by clubs, by the cops, or they just committed suicide or just died of starvation, you know, because they couldn't get work anymore because they'd been blacklisted, or, you know, I mean, not that you're risking that when you're anonymously shooting down a website.
If you
sign a petition first. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, Avaaz could do this kind of thing. Avaaz could link up with Anonymous and say, okay, look, you don't have to be anonymous. This would be a great thing for them to do. If Avaaz linked with Anonymous and said, just step out of the shadows, guys, sign the petition, which says, I'm going to hammer the crap out of Visa because you're assholes and you did this, and maybe don't use my language, folks.
I'd not heard of Avaaz before. Can you please explain Avaaz?
You don't know that?
Okay. I hadn't heard of them until the recent petition regarding WikiLeaks.
I don't know a lot about Avaaz. I've signed up with them because I generally am interested in the things that they're sort of trying to get petitions for. You know, they're like GetUp. They're like an international GetUp organisation.
Right.
In Australia, we have GetUp, which is like Avaaz. And it's
in the US they have Move On.
Yeah, it's basically raising petitions for people to sign to prevent injustices happening around the world. And these are things that the government is too bloody pig lazy to, you know, do anything about. And humanity rises up and says, actually, this sucks. You can't be stoning women because their husband decided they didn't want to be married to them anymore. You can't be, you know, locking up Julian, what's his name? Assange.
French.
No, who's that guy?
The guy
who lost the election. He likes to call him Julian Assange. You know, the guy in the budgie smugglers. I can't say his name, it's like Voldemort. Anyway, Avaaz is basically...
That's
A-V-A-A-Z.
That's it. I do believe I've signed on to that petition as well.
Yeah. I think I sent out...
At the time, there was 800 and something odd thousand.
Yeah, they didn't get as many as I hoped they would. But
I find with most things, you know, 99% of the population doesn't really care. Because it doesn't seem to directly affect them.
Exactly.
They always believe
they can still go out and buy themselves a plasma television screen, their iPod, their you know, new car.
Yeah.
So as long as you keep chucking toys at people, they're not going to complain.
But what is interesting about all this is the fact that the internet is heavily controlled now by corporations, and corporations have they seem to operate nowadays outside of state jurisdictions, and therefore with the American government wanting to act against WikiLeaks but unable to find any piece of legislation to enact upon, has then gone to the corporations who operate outside that sphere and don't need those legal processes in order to enact out something. And that's like you saw that systematic shutdown of accounts associated with WikiLeaks, and they all use the same sort of thing that, you know, our policy says.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, a corporation doesn't have to, or business does not have to do any business with anybody they don't want to, for any reason.
Which is quite right.
But that's right. But
you know,
what we're seeing,
I wouldn't want to build a website for some fucker who wanted me to put, you know, flashing GIF, rotating annoying icons on. I think that stick that fucking thing up your ass.
But it highlights the internet is problematic. You know, you're talking about in the real world your civil liberties and things like that. And from the government, you know, government or the Western government's point of view, they've got, to date, there has been no charge brought against the organisation. Yet in the business world, all they have to do is just say amongst themselves, saying, well, let's just shut this down. We don't want this information. And the internet, this is the thing, is that it's meant to be a public space. But as we've seen from this, it's not a public space. And you'll be abandoned at a drop of a pin.
If you were to draw a picture of the internet with, you know, a pen on a big piece of paper right in front of our little audience here in the oral world right now, you'd draw a big ball and write Facebook, another big ball, you'd write Google, which would include, you know, YouTube, obviously.
And then PayPal and eBay.
PayPal and eBay, and you'd have all these big balls, and they'd all be existing inside the internet. But then you would have your users, and you would say, okay, how many users are inside that ball, and this ball, and that ball, and this ball, and how many are outside?
Which comes back to that 99% of the population who doesn't really care.
So at the moment, we still have this liquid medium that these big balls are moving around in, called the internet. But the problem is that all these users are voluntarily moving into these enclosed spaces. They're trapping themselves in there, and the more time they spend inside the Facebook ball or the YouTube ball or whatever, they're making up all their connections, they're building up their little societies, and it's for most users that it's not important to them. They're just like, oh, it's just something I'm playing around with, you know, it's some old school friends, or it's just some funny videos I watch. But the problem is they're locking themselves into this stuff. And when something really important comes along, like WikiLeaks, they go, well, I can't access it, you know. So there must be criminals. But they're not. And that's the problem. People are painting themselves into corners, you know. They're getting themselves stuck into these spaces.
But that comes back to what we may actually see is more of this peer-to-peer type of
I hope so, because people are getting trapped, you know. And I feel like it's a fairly important time we're at right now, and a lot of people aren't getting it.
Which probably takes us to larger questions of network topography and things like the National Broadband Network, and do we want a world where every computer on the internet is equal, or do we want to be, as Ruben puts it so eloquently, trapped in a big bag of balls?
I'm thinking of one of those jungle bungle things with hundreds of balls that you roll around in all day. You know, the kids get into those balls.
You're stuck inside those balls, and the kids are rattling it, or Facebook's rattling it.
Yeah, but the funny thing is, I was, you know, talking about the internet and how it evolved.
Or the gonads.
The internet didn't have gonads originally.
No, it's just a big sack full of balls.
But I remember the early days, you know, we never talked about quotas. We used to just talk about dial-up costs. There was never any quota per se. They would chop you off every 3 months.
How much
can
you download in a week on 28 megabits? Oh, sorry, no, 28 kilobits per second.
Yeah, but the thing is, but the way the early infrastructure was made was that, you know, organization A wanted to become an internet service provider, so they'd have a whole pile of modems put in, ISDN lines fired up into it. They would then have to lease, you know, some sort of line back to somebody else to connect into the internet. So, you know, they may actually ring up a education institution because they had some of the bigger pipes. And the education institution would say, yeah, well, you can connect into us. But in return, we want to expand the internet and make it more robust. So if you're going to connect into us, you know, with 128, well, in those days it was like 64 kilobits, but anyway, they would say you get another frame and point it northward and connect it into another institution or organisation, and therefore you've created another link in the the internet and therefore making it more robust, as in, you know, you've got more than one path. Mm. And away you went. Nobody thought of shaping. It just was. But over a period of time, and, you know, getting into the mid-90s, that's when Big Pond came aboard. And slowly, bit by bit, you know, you look at the cost of your frames, frame relays, versus, you know, Big Pond's, well, in the early days, was a dial-up, and then came ADSL. You can't compete. So, of course, you start then buying wholesale services, and over a period of time, 80% of the internet now is owned by one organisation. And now we're moving towards the next phase, which is what? The NBN.
Totally government owned. WikiLeaks wouldn't exist.
Yeah, no, well, the thing is, it's not totally government owned, but, you know, the infrastructure is, but we're not getting any brand new business model. And
well, surely if the infrastructure is owned by the government, it's totally government owned.
Yeah, but the thing is, they're not modulating the data. They're only providing layer two, so they've got no way.
How do you know they're not modulating the data?
Well, that's what.
Well, what's the whole that thing they've been rabbiting on about for the last few years? The filter, you know.
Well, that comes back to the internet service providers.
Well, if the government's building the infrastructure, surely they're going to build that.
No, it's still up to the service providers. All they're doing is providing wholesale. Point to point, basically, or layer two.
Research,
and that's the big question, isn't it? Why not provide layer three, and then provide the internet to every household, and then it's up to the individual what type of services they want to plug into their internet connection, be it phone, be it your computer, be it some sort of other service like their digital TVs, etc. I'd love to have beer coming out of the internet.
Yeah. Order it. You go to Tui's.com. We'll have 6 pints of beer.
So rather than fibre, yes, pipes. A new set of pipes, and you can go online, and you can just
pick how it works.
You can pick your flavour. You know, tonight I'm going to drink on tap. Tui's new. And
now
there
you're talking.
You just pull the lever, and it just flows.
Anyway,
we need a segue.
We do.
I learned how to
spell segue today. I thought I was going through segway, which I realised was just the thing you stand on and it rolls around.
Hmm.
And there's segueway, which is wrong.
Hmm.
It's actually spelled segue. Segue is segue.
Yes.
That's wrong. That's fucking French or something. That's not English.
Yeah, well, half the words in English come from the French.
Yeah. Pork-headed monsieur.
Ooh,
yeah, you're right.
And the rest come from somewhere else. It's just to make life harder for people who weren't born in an English-speaking country.
Emerus
at the moment is learning to speak... he speaks already. But he's learning to read English, because he's my son. Sorry, so that's the language he speaks. And he's learning it by reading Asterix and Obelix. We home educate our children, and as you know, education is one of those things which they have many different techniques for education. You know, there's in England, I was raised in the comprehensive schools, and before the comprehensive schools, they had the grammar schools, and you know, and they always have these different sort of. It's a very fashion-led thing, the education system. Well, home education is no different, and there are, you know, it's not home education, but we have Montessori, and what's the thing that Ewan goes to, Steiner, and all these different education techniques, and so we have these education techniques in our house, and a while ago with Evan we had the Monty Python home education technique, which when we were teaching about sex and how, you know, he's 16 now, and we figure he's going to have to learn
about
sex.
You're drawing a picture in my mind. I'm just thinking about that particular scene. Yes, keep on going.
So we were teaching about how he should wear a condom to prevent sexual diseases. And so there's that wonderful song, which you can listen to a little snippet of it right now. You know the song, don't you, Matthew?
No. every sperm.
No, not that one at all. No, it's I can't remember how it goes. It's chlamydia.
Graham Chapman's.
We'll cut this bit out and put the song in.
Yeah, Graham Chapman's medical love song from the contractual obligation album.
We played that song to Evan.
My heart is very tender, although my parts are awful raw. You might have been infected, but you never were a bore. I'm dying from your love, my love, I'm your spirochetal clown. I've left my body to science, but I'm afraid they've turned it down.
We played this song to Evan probably 12 times a day for about a week, and I'm hoping he took some of it on board. And
It's opened my mind.
It's opened a few sores as well, apparently. And anyway, so Emrys this week has been reading Asterix and Obelix, but unfortunately, he seems to be learning more Latin than English.
Well, sort of joke Latin.
Well, Sherry's been translating. My partner, Sherry, studies Latin, so she's been able to translate for me a lot, and or for Emrys rather, and me, and she's, kind of getting it, and a lot of it's they're taking these classical quotes, from old stuff, Latin quotes, but messing them around a bit, and it's good stuff. How do we get onto this subject, sorry?
I must reread those. I know you've already got them, but as well as Asterisk and Obelisk, you must get him reading Calvin and Hobbes.
Oh, don't even start me on Calvin and Hobbes. We had a whole year of Calvin and Hobbes home education.
Yeah.
And Calvin and Hobbes is kind of like a former era, like a romantic old era of The Simpsons. The Simpsons is modern day trash, but Calvin and Hobbes, it's much more romantic.
It was kind of contiguous with The Simpsons. It started in the 80s, and I think it ended in the 90s. It went for... It went for 10 years, and then the creator, Bill Watterson,
Who is God.
Oh, he has artistic integrity like nobody else.
Like the creator of The Simpsons.
Yes, yes.
But who's Richard?
Sorry?
I said, who's richer?
Who's happier?
Bill Watterson's richer in soul and spirit.
Yes. For the whole time he was doing it, it was a tremendously popular syndicated strip. And it is sublimely funny and beautiful and wonderful. Yes. And he never merchandised it. There is not a single bit of official licensed Calvin and Hobbes merchandise. There isn't a lunchbox, there isn't a frisbee, there isn't a t-shirt. There are pirated, in inverted commas.
Which he sends shutdowns to.
Yeah. Does he? Does he? I didn't know if he actively policed these things.
Actually, I don't know. I know shutdowns get sent to them, but maybe it's not him. Because how litigious these independent lawyers get.
I've got a Calvin and Hobbes t-shirt, which doesn't fit me anymore, but it is not officially licensed merchandise, because he basically said that this is the medium in which these characters exist. It wouldn't be right to have them on a t-shirt or a lunchbox or to make an animated film.
I know he had
a fight
with the Sunday Papers, because they essentially said you need to have a strip with three or four windows, and that's it.
Yeah.
And he was saying, no, I want to have the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And put in enough room to put in a message, more than just a haha, a Garfield, like just an inane little
three box.
So he's actually put in a story which has got a message, I find when I read them, it's a sort of step backwards in your life, step back in time. It's like, remember when you were a kid and you did this and it was fun. That's the end of the message. That's it. It's just like, geez, that was great, wasn't it? And it's lovely, It's really...
Well, I have to get the book out of the bookcase.
Books. We come around my place and sit on the back deck and have a read anytime you like. We've got piles of them. And they're all... One complaint I have about Bill Waterson's books, the books wear out too quickly.
Because you read them 20 times.
Is that why? Yeah. I don't know, but they seem to wear out. The binding goes, and they start falling apart. And we've got all these books at home, and they're all falling apart. And they're beautiful to read, you know. You sit on the back deck at my place in the sunshine, and you're reading them, and they're all about this kid running around fields and playing in the snow with his crazy little lion, cat, tiger. Yeah, it's beautiful stuff. I'm a big fan.
I was going to say, I grew up with Obelix Asterix. And also Beano magazine.
What, the English Beano?
Yes, we used to get them shipped out.
Dennis the Menace.
Dennis the Menace, and there was also another
Minnie
one.
The Minx.
Yeah.
And
we had piles and piles. And there's another book out there, I think it's Rupert the Bear.
Oh no, really?
Yeah, we've got some of the old classics with
Paul McCartney's his songwriter, isn't he?
Rupert the Bear. Everybody knows his name.
Well, we all do, yes. But the thing is, those like Rupert the Bear, like we've got one which was the first colour one, which was after the war. I think they did it just to sort of like say that, you know, we've won the war and, you know, we can now lash out and afford, you know, colour cartoons instead of black and white. But the thing is, when you actually look at the plate work on those, every single page, it's almost perfect. Whereas nowadays, when you look at comics and etc., you know, it's fuzzed, it's blurred. And I think
Paul, you're showing your age here, not nowadays. When we were kids, it was fuzzed and blurred. Nowadays, it's perfect again. If you look at the...
Do they still run comics in newspapers?
No. Graphic novels.
Oh, yes.
And they're perfect. They really are.
Graphic novels, yes.
If you go down, find a comic down there, the closest you'll get is The Phantom. That's maybe not perfect. But everything else
My
is.
My wife loves The Phantom.
She needs to talk to Cameron.
Well, in Papua New Guinea, when I was living up there as a kid, The Phantom was like a superhero to the nationals there. They used to love The Phantom. I don't know why, but yes, they couldn't get enough of it.
Cameron used to collect The Phantom, and I think he has the first issue. He has tons and tons of them, but I think he gave them away just like literally a few weeks ago.
But
if Verity is very quick and gets around to him, offers to bake him a pancake and have one more.
And maybe talk about the Doctor Who.
No, he hates Doctor Who. Cameron's my wife and I know everything about him. So.
Does Verity like Doctor Who?
Yes.
Okay. We're going to have to arrange some sort of...
Doctor Who?
There's only a week until Doctor Who Day comes.
Christmas special... Yeah.
Christmas? What's that? Sorry, Doctor Who Day.
Isaac Newton's birthday.
When Doctor Who comes down my chimney and delivers the next episode to me.
And also, she also likes some of the Star Treks, not all of them. Deep Space Nine just gets on your skin.
So she doesn't like Doctor Who. Deep Space Nine.
Some of them, you know, like Voyager and things like that.
I don't get Star Trek at all. I really don't understand it.
And if you had a choice between Star Wars and Star Trek, what would you choose?
Star Trek.
Star Wars.
You haven't seen the Clone Wars yet, have you? The cartoon.
No. Okay. But have you seen the Star Trek cartoon that came out in the early 70s after the original TV series was cancelled? I don't... it was done in that awful, cheap American animation style of everything's freeze-framed
but
with lips moving.
For our listeners, Matthew is demonstrating the movements as we speak.
But they seriously did that after the TV series was cancelled. They did a series or two. I could look up Wikipedia, but I don't care.
Cheap Chinese animators, and they just drill them
no,
off
it was
for
cheap American animators, presumably the same people who did the Flintstones or whatever.
No, sorry, I'm just picturing Fred Flintstone as Captain Kirk.
It was
really weird.
Fire into what, Barney?
I think we should take a recording break because this file is getting too big for me to edit.
Definitely, I need to take a piss.
And we need to get
drink some more wine.
We need to get a book of Calvin and Hobbes off the shelf for Paul to leaf through. While I look up the internet.
I can hear some music on it. Star Trek.
I recognise this track. It's that one about the. You'll have to think of a track about something now.
Speaking of sortie leaks,
of various kinds. There's also something else that's transpired that is never going to make the broadcast edition of this podcast because...
Well, who is the asshole with this message? Is it Liddy? Is that the phone? He must be a little nuts. Yeah. He fishes well for an honest.
Why don't you write it down? I'll read it
out. He'll give me a Glasgow kiss and I'll go down like a sack of potatoes. But,
You call him. That's the deal. Play it up. The way they play it, that's where we're going to play it. Okay.
Jeez, the politics are worse in Sawtelle than they are in the council.
So.
I shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow.